Hi, I'm Devin Whitmire. People from South Carolina, like myself, are proud of their state, but even we don't know every nook and cranny or every piece of culture or history. To explore places that are off the beaten path, you have to talk to the people there because their stories, their ideas make everything come together. From Discover South Carolina, it's the Palmetto Porch. To learn more, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
On this episode of Warbird Radio, we're talking to a legend in the Warbird community, the guy who knows where all of the parts are. He's created a career and a lifetime devoted to this work. Jay Whistler joins us right now from the National Warbird Operators Conference in Dallas, Texas. Jay, welcome to Warbird Radio.
Thank you, Matt.
I'm glad to have you here. You've literally, I think, collected hundreds of thousands of parts across a career that spans decades in this.
I started in 1982.
How'd you get into this?
I was in the Corvette business, and I had an old Corvette. I needed parts for it to fix it, so I went and bought another one, and then I bought another one, and I gathered the parts. I fixed my good car, and I ended up with about 30 cars. And I did the same thing with airplanes.
Well, where did the love for the airplanes come from?
I don't know. I had nobody in the military. My dad and my uncle were in the military, but they were in the Army. No airplanes involved in my family at all. I just loved them. Went to an air show when I was 2 years old and sat on my uncle's shoulders and peed on him when the jets came over. And that was the beginning. I loved air shows.
Yeah. Wow.
And airplanes.
Specifically the World War II airplanes.
Oh, yeah. They had to be World War II.
And I can only imagine, because I've only had this experience a time or two, where you walk into a hangar and there it is. And you go, oh, my gosh, it's got just enough dust on it to make it look like no one has seen it in 60, 70 years. But you had that experience time and time again.
I had that time. I came in at the right time, and I met some of the right people. Dave Talachet, he was one of my heroes because he owned all the restaurants. Yeah. He had all these airplanes.
Right.
And I even worked for Dave for a while in Florida.
The Proud Bird.
Yeah. Yeah. Just in Florida. And Dave told me a lot of places where he got his airplane parts, introduced me to a lot of people, and he was a great connection.
It makes me wonder. I mean, we've got a parts collection in our hangar for Dablin Chipmunks and Tiger Moths, and yes. It makes me wonder if it's all going to start again. Your parts collection was sold off. You sold your business, and it went up to the Fagans.
Yes.
Thank goodness, because it's going to be cared for now, probably.
You've done a great job.
Yeah, and it's all been cataloged and computerized. But it makes me wonder if these parts collections, if these huge inventories that you were not able to buy up, I'm sure there's still stuff out there in the world, if they're going to change hands again. Do you think we're at the point now where generationally someone could come in and do what you were able to pull off?
I don't think so. I think there's no more large collections. I bought the last large collection from Connie Edwards.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that a good one?
I bought all of his P-51 parts.
I got to go out there years and years and years ago And what a magical place. You got to share a little bit about that because you were on the inside.
I first met Connie in 1985, and he had the PBY at Reno at the air races.
The turtle.
I was by myself. And I asked him if I could put my chair under the wing. It was hot, very hot. And he said, no, help yourself. And came over out of nowhere, and he said, we got sandwiches right now. Do you want a sandwich? Sure. So I ate a sandwich with him, and he said, you want to go see that air show? A good place? I said, sure. He said, let's go up top. Went in the airplane, climbed up top, come up the skate patch over in co-pilot skate patch. There's lawn chairs up there on the wing of the airplane. I'm sitting there with Connie Edwards watching the air show. And he got guys bringing beer back up on a bucket.
Well, I was going to say there.
And hoist them up in a bucket and a rope.
There was never a beer very far away back then.
And
those days.
I was just scared to death somebody's going to fall off that wing because they were all drinking.
Right.
But that's how I met Connie.
Wow.
And that started a love affair with his collection and his stories he told. And I got where I stayed with Jack Roush and we go out and stay with Connie at his house at Toad Hall. And he'd sit there and tell stories. You know, I'd say, well, we'll sit down and have a beer until the wives get supper ready. That'd be 9 o'clock. And then we'd eat supper and go right back into the cellar and drink more beer, tell more stories. And sometimes these stories were 2 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't drink. That was the bad part. But Connie did.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so fascinating. I mean, Jack Roush, he'd go to bed at midnight, have to go to bed. And I'd stay with Connie at 2 o'clock in the morning. He'd tell me about the CIA invasion of Cuba. You know, all the stories, his call name, what comments about finding a foot stuck in his oil cooler in the wing off a tank operator. That he blew up. Stories like this, you can't hear. Very rare to, would Connie sit and tell a story like that. But then all of a sudden, he'd break, open up, tell good stories.
Connie had a collection of stuff. It came from filming the movie, The Battle of Britain.
Right.
I mean, that was part of the collection. But he had, and that's the stuff that people know about, right? But he had crates and crates and crates of Merlins. And I don't think people really realized everything that was down there in Big Spring.
They had no idea. We didn't know how many engines he had. To be honest, Jack Roush bought the engines. Anything to do with the engines, Jack bought. And there's about 40 of them. And I bought all the rest of the stuff.
Parts and
anything
parts.
Anything P-51.
Yeah. And he had that P-51 down there for years. But
well, see, he had 9 P-51s. That's where he bought. He bought the Nicaraguan Air Force. And his brother got killed. They put one airplane together for Bill. And Bill got killed right away. And Connie shoved the airplanes back. That's it. He wouldn't do anything. And then Connie goes ahead and starts selling one here, one there. And that's how it happened. And when Connie died, he owned one Mustang, one Spitfire Mark V, and all the 2 Albatrosses, 2 PBYs, all the Gooses, Mallards, everything.
And a whole bunch of,
Pigeons.
Well, the Pigeon, too, the ME-109 Spanish version.
He had 5 of those.
Bouchon, that's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah, one of them was a two-place.
Yeah, which is the only one around.
Only one.
Remarkable stuff that he had. Was there ever a collection or that lone airplane in the hangar that you walked in that stays with you that just says, I cannot believe I'm seeing what I'm seeing? Was there one of those moments? Because you're sort of the Indiana Jones of the Warbird business.
Back in the early days, there was 2 brothers and outside of Chicago, Murfreesboro, and they had a little museum. And they had 3 ME-109s, Bouchons, there at their place. They had a PBY. They had a P-47, which Charlie Nichols has now. They had a Baca bomb, a real one, that had never been demilitarized. Hmm. They had an AT-11 and a B-25, an A-26. And I just went in there, and I got to be good friends with Earl and his brother, and ended up buying the B-25. And then I bought the A-26 for Kermit Weeks. I didn't have money to keep both of them, so I sold that one. Kermit took that one. And there was a PBY there that crashed, and I got that one. But yes, there was the ME 109s, they disappeared one at a time, you know, and I was in on the ground floor. And I remember Charlie Nichols buying the P-47. It was an M model, only one in existence. And I just could see myself buying that airplane. I'm finding wrecked airplanes in the woods and recovering them. And here's a whole airplane.
Yeah.
And I have one name painted on one side and one name painted on the other side. Earl wanted people to think he had two P-47s. We had a good time out there.
I love it. Oh, gosh. That's the way to do it, I guess.
I bought the AT-11 also. I bought three airplanes out of there.
Well, that's a great find. But not only airplanes, but the parts that you've come into, because it's the parts that keep these things going, right? I mean, it's the consumables.
Well, he was the man that bought the Bolivian Air Force after the war was over. And he parted out all their P-47s to get the engines yeah. and propellers. That's all he cared about.
Wow. Yeah, the rest is history.
Yeah.
I want to dive into your relationship with, your friendship with Jack Roush. Let's talk about that. He's sure. been on the show back in, well, I don't know, 10 years ago he came on. And I remember he is a teacher through and through, and I don't think a lot of people realize that, but he's been a long time teaching in school, in fact.
Right there in Kentucky.
And just, he is a natural-born teacher, but talk to me about your friendship with Mr. Roush.
Well, it started back in 1970. Jack was pro stock racing, and I was racing. I was a little guy, couldn't afford pro stockers. And this buddy of mine bought a race car, came out of Detroit. And it belonged to Doug Nash, which is a good friend of Jack's. And Doug Nash said, if y'all ever need any parts, my best friend's Jack Roush. Call Jack Roush, and he'll take care of you. And we called him several times, you know, and that was about it. And I wasn't that close to him. The buddy of mine sold the car. We didn't continue racing it. And I didn't see Jack again to 74 to Gator Nationals. I talked to him then, and he says, oh, yeah, I remember you and everything. And he was number one qualifier, and he lost the final round. He was later on the tree. And we got to be good friends, and then we didn't see each other from about 76 on. In 1995, Jack had bought a T6 and needed a set of wheels, tires, and brakes. And he called me. He heard that I had T6 brakes. And I said, yeah, I got them here. And he said, I need a whole set. I sold them to him, and Jack was happy as could be. And it was in December of 95. He said, come to Daytona. We're going to test in January. You'll be my guest. And I did. And we liked each other, and we started talking about the old days. And he said, I remember. I remember you from 1970.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, you were in building 16. It was on Market Street. And he says, yeah. He said, I still got that warehouse today.
Wow.
And he said, come to Daytona in February next month. And he said, just stay with me for the week. He got me a room, and I stayed over there. And we've been going to all the races and all the air shows all these years.
Been a great friendship.
Yep. It's one of the deals, you start out as a customer, and he becomes your best friend.
Well, here's my dilemma in thinking about this. You were a Corvette guy. Did you convert to become a Mustang guy?
I've never had a Ford. I had a Mustang for my graduation present in 64.
Wow.
Was a Mustang. And my dad started reading Ralph Nader reports, and they said it was junk. And it was no.
Did you believe him?
No. My dad did.
Your dad did.
He took the car away and got me a big old Ford Galaxy.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I never had a Ford. I never raced a Ford.
Yeah.
And Jack, I drive Suburbans. And Jack, I go pick him up in a Suburban. We go out to eat. We go into the pits. We park next to his motorhome in my Suburban. He's the only Ford man in the whole pits driving a Suburban around. And he didn't care.
With his good buddy Jay.
He doesn't hold it against me at all.
And Ed Ed Sofort
did make a comment to me one time about a Chevrolet.
Yeah. What did he say?
When I can afford one, they'll sell me a Ford.
There you go. Yeah, well.
But he didn't seem to care either.
Yeah.
I mean, those are good down-to-earth people.
Oh, they are. They are. And big supporters of aviation all around.
All the way.
Of course, Roush famously creates the engine for the P-51 Mustang, was a P-51 Mustang owner for a long time.
Yes.
And we owe him a great debt in keeping these airplanes around.
He did something nobody's ever done. He got the parts legalized. He made a part. He got them PMA'd. And now they're available to you, me, anybody with a Mustang. We don't have to buy a part that we're not sure about. We know that it's up to specs or better, and he's making it, and he gives you a PMA.
We saw Paul Draper walking around here.
He's here.
Yeah, Paul is here, who runs the engine shop up there at Roush, and just so many other things that Paul has his hands in, but it's good to see it. Do you feel like it's in good hands, the Warbird community as a whole?
As a whole, we're losing a lot of very important people, engine builders. They're retiring. And you can't get these young kids, they don't want to work on a big radial engine because there's no market for it. And nobody's coming up, not filling shoes. They're closing prop shops. They're closing engine shops, plexiglass shops. You know, where do you get a P-51 canopy made?
Right. Yeah. A lot of opportunity. There's some young guys that are here. Corey Miller's just down here with Strix Aero.
Corey's great.
Doing some good stuff, and I'm encouraged. I look around and I see guys like Ethan Malavolti and the other folks we've had on, and Eric Hocuff, the Erics, True Blood and Hocuff. What?
Eric, I've seen you.
They're going to have to make it. That's the answer
I've
to your question.
Eric, he started out buying parts from me.
Yeah.
Memorabilia. And his wife had a little catalog, and they sold these parts. And now he got 72 employees.
Yeah.
He's sitting on top of the world.
Well, that's the answer to your question. Where are you going to buy a Mustang canopy? Eric Hoka's going to have
Eric.
He's going to have to make it.
Eric is covering every base.
Well, Jay Whistler, thanks for sitting down with us.
That's the future.
I hope so. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I appreciate you sitting down with us. The Indiana Jones of the Warbird business, Jay Whistler.
We had a good time.
Amen. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back with more here from the National Warbird Operators Conference in Dallas, Texas, here on Warbird Radio. Glad you're here.
This is Warbird Radio.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance, like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Families agents. Life's better when you're under American Families roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another. And don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation. But then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano, and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof, while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof massaging leather-appointed seats are available features.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome back to Warbird Radio. I'm Matt Jolly. We're coming to you from the National Warbird Operators Conference in Dallas, Texas. We were just talking to Jay Whistler. You heard him mention Eric Hocuff. And who walks into the room? Eric Hocuff from Air Corps. Welcome.
Thank you.
You've been on, I don't know, several times on Warbird Radio, but your company is just, it's growing leaps and bounds. Jay Whistler said you're the future of this business, and I think he's, in large part, correct. He asked the question, he said, where are you going to buy a P-51 canopy? And I said, So, well, Eric's going to have to make it. Do you make them yet? Is this something?
We do not make.
Plexiglass is a hard thing to find.
Yeah, plexiglass is kind of a different medium than, you know, typically a lot of what we make is aircraft structures.
Yeah.
And parts to restore P-51s and other aircraft. But we do a little bit of plexiglass work, but not canopies yet.
You have embraced technology in a way that so many shops just didn't have the money to, didn't have the resources to, but you made a strong effort. I think you've really shown a lot of different shops the way forward in this, and you're bringing in mechanics and people that are interested in this, and you've built one of the best places to work in Bemidji. Literally, it's called in the magazines up there one of the top companies to work for.
Yeah.
Did you ever think this was possible in Warbirds?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was never the goal. That was never the goal. It's just the goal has been to serve our customers and keep Warbirds flying and, you know, just keep doing what we do.
Yeah. And delivering the product. I mean, there's so many shops. And you know this. I mean, they're underfunded. They're understaffed. And there's all these projects that people want, and they all want them quickly.
Yep.
And that's a tall order to fill.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely one of the biggest challenges is delivering quickly. That's one of the things that we talk a lot about in our organization currently is days to deliver. That's really important. That's one thing that's everyone has the same amount of time in their life. And it's important to them to when they engage in a restoration or a rebuild to have it done quickly so we're just kind of focused on that, doing a good job and keeping a quality product, but trying to get it rebuild or flying as soon as we can. So,
what's the biggest challenge in your day to day or daily operation? I've got some guesses, but I'd like to hear from you.
Yeah. Well, there's, of course, different challenges every day. But, to do what we do in our business, it typically takes five things. Number one is people, of course. Without people, we can't do anything. It takes facilities, and so we have to plan ahead and make sure we have the shop space and the roof over our head, and in northern Minnesota, good heat and all those things. And it takes parts. Parts are kind of the lifeblood of any restoration or any maintenance shop, and so parts are critical in keeping that flow of parts going. It takes machines and equipment. To obviously make parts, to assemble parts, to do the maintenance. And then it takes resources and, people always come first. Those other things, the priorities and the challenges come in different order depending on the day. You know, that's, resources, one of the reasons we built Air Corps Library and created that, website and that project, and
where you digitize not only the maintenance manuals but everything that goes with it.
Yeah,
plans, parts. Right. I mean, it's all there.
Right. Yep. So it's resources are critical. If you have good people and you have those resources available, you give them the tools and a good place to work. You can do anything, but. Yeah, so it's different challenges every day, but, we can always use more help to get things done faster and do more.
So did you hear that? If you're listening to this and you're dreaming about a job in Warbirds and you're tired of working in the maintenance shop, turning wrenches on a Cessna or something like that, you need people.
We would love to talk to you. Yeah, we have currently we have 75 people that work at Air Corps. We have about 15 or so open positions that we're looking to fill and taking applicants, and we get a lot of strong applicants consistently, but we're looking for the right person that fits our team and our culture, and of course we're looking for skills, but there's a lot of skills that we can build, and we don't assume anyone is going to have exactly the skills and the knowledge that we need off the bat. So we're looking for people that fit the team and want to learn and have a passion. And the passion doesn't necessarily need to be World War II airplanes or World War II history per se. That's interesting to everybody, but we, you know, people that might be passionate in machining or metal forming, passionate in electrical work, assembly. We've got several guys who are carpenters and other construction workers who know how to build things, read a set of plans, bring things together, and manage a project. Everyone manages a project, whether that project is a few parts and one small assembly, or the entire airplane. So we're looking for all kinds of different people, and CAD technicians, engineers,
3D scanning. I mean, you were 3D one of scanning the is first one of to the do things. That.
Right. Yeah. That's been an important tool in our toolbox to allow us to restore these airplanes. We try to really meet people where they are today. Typically, in the Warbird world, old airplanes, old skills and built with older technology. Most guys or most shops or most people think that they need to know how to run an English wheel or a power hammer or, things like that to make parts. We do some of that. We understand it. We appreciate it. We have some of those tools. We pull them out when we need to. But we primarily use the computer and technology to accelerate the process, build parts more accurately. In the same way they were built originally, but using the tools to accelerate that process. And most people can see the path to completion using a computer and a CNC machine versus looking at a power hammer, an English wheel, or shrinker, stretcher, things to that effect. So.
And your work has its own signature. I mean, you look out there and you take an art piece and you think, yep, well, that is definitely Van Gogh. There's a signature, there's a style to it,
right?
You line 5 P-51s up and I guarantee you we could all pick yours out because there's a signature.
Yeah.
And part of that is the authenticity. You actually employ a historian.
Yeah, we do. Yep. We have a fellow who spends his time, Chuck Craven spends his time, researching the history of the airplanes that we're restoring, and the restorations that we do, they all have a story to tell. And that's an important piece for us and for the customer, of course. And then, just for the real purpose of why we're doing this. So yeah, it's a key piece.
And Chuck never comes back and says, "I'm sorry, your airplane did absolutely nothing."
Yeah, no, there's always something you can find. There's a story if an airplane, maybe didn't go overseas, there's still, anything that's is 80 years old. Has stories to tell. And of course, those stories are all based around people, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
What do you want people to know? I mean, we're here at this conference. We've talked a lot about this. The data shows it. It's just a decline.
Yep.
In the interest of these. And then you hear a guy like Lucky Lucky to get up there and speak.
Yeah.
And you go, my goodness, how is it that we're not communicating this message in the right way? I know you're a huge believer in what we're doing. Everyone in this room is a huge believer in what we're doing. What would you like to see happen to rekindle this?
Yeah, well, I think it's meeting young people and younger people where they are. And, people get their information and people learn different every year, every generation. There's a different way of taking things in and learning things, and it's hard sometimes. I'm learning this as I get older and my kids get older, and I never thought of myself as an old person, but our kids,
I got news, Eric. We're getting there.
Remind Sarah and I that we're older and
we're getting there.
Yep. And learning how to meet young people where they are and connecting with them and sharing stories, whether it's your own story, stories of veterans, but, kids really do want to hear those stories and understand the purpose and you know, sometimes we get kind of maybe bashful about sharing those stories, or, you know, we don't want to talk about ourselves, things like that. And you know, that's certainly our culture to not feel comfortable doing that. But you know, what we're doing is really important, what our customers are doing and their purpose and why they're investing in these amazing aircraft is really important. And so, yeah, I would just say meeting young people with, you know, where they are and don't be afraid to explore new technologies and learn from those kids and young people. So, yeah.
The thing we hate the most is really the thing that's going to save us. And this is what I've been hanging my hat on here lately, is that when you go to an air show, the thing that Warbird operators hate the most is honestly, it's the thing that's going to save us. People, they cannot relate to these airplanes.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do when they run up is, what do? They touch it.
You want to touch
what
it?
What is this? Yeah. And it's this excitement that comes over them. And tomorrow we're going to hear from Dr. Dick Daso, who is a former fighter pilot, retired from the Air Force. He's Smithsonian curator, and now he's the executive director of the Air Force Historical Foundation. And he talks a lot about this tactile response and how critical it is to developing these core memories. And they learned that at Smithsonian. They developed exhibits for that. What we do as operators, in large part, is at air shows, and we have that ability.
Right.
Not everybody can run up and touch a newly restored P-47.
Right.
I get that.
Right, yep.
But there's an experience that can come from that. Maybe it's having an old part. Maybe it's some kind of interactive display. I think we need a trailer that you can walk up to beside an airplane, and you can go, my grandfather's name was, my grandmother's name was, and then boom. Here it is, because we don't know what they did.
Right.
Yeah. And suddenly that becomes real.
Yeah.
Are we going to get there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it takes conversations like that and intentionality, you know, in our industry and to understand that people need to, you know, touch things and put their hands on things. I mean, you know, as operators, that's one of the part of the experience, right? And riding in a Mustang is the noise and the heat and the feeling,
and
right?
The smell
and all those senses.
And I'm not just talking about the Bernie, because that guy wears some awesome cologne. But anyway,
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
You hear that, Bernie? All right. You let Bernie fly enough stuff. He is the Bernie, by the way. We've named him the Bernie in the airshow world. But no, you let Bernie fly enough stuff, or Hinton and. Oh, my gosh. You can't go wrong, Eric. It's impossible to mess this up. We just have to be better, as you said, at meeting them where they are and telling the story. Man, you're on fire up there. The two Erics. You got to get True Blood over here at some point.
I'll send him this way.
But what you're doing up there is phenomenal. How can folks get a hold of you?
Yeah, well, just check out our website, aircoreaviation.com. You know, you can get a hold of us through that. Our contact information is there, and you can learn more about us and learn about all the things we do. And you know, yeah, if you've had an interest in getting involved as a career with World War II aircraft, we'd love to talk to you.
And I would love to hear about it, because I'm telling you, if you're a listener to this show, I now have to use two hands to describe or to tell the number of people we've placed in this business who have gotten this addiction. They were kids when they first started listening to this, and now they're gainfully employed at shops and as pilots. Yeah. It's possible to go from listener to active participant and to working in this career field.
Absolutely.
So, Eric, thanks for being here. And look, I'm not down on this. Nobody is down on Warbirds, but it is time to start telling a story that resonates with our audience. I was in L.A. I was in Australia. I've seen literally 2 million people on the beach in awe as the sound of the Merlin comes over. And I'm telling you, as an airshow announcer, when that story is told and when it's told properly, there is an emotional connection and a swell of just unbelievable pride.
Absolutely.
That comes from hearing this. You got to keep these things going. And as Lucky Luckadoo charged us with this morning, to keep them flying. Eric Hokef is doing that. You can find him online. We're going to quick link it into the show story. Thanks for being here. We'll have more from the National Warbird Operators Conference in Dallas, Texas on Warbird Radio after this. Like, subscribe, and follow, and be sure and sign up for our newsletter. We appreciate you being here.
This is Warbird Radio.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.